and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Monday, June 14th, 2021. I'm your reader, Ralph Skippers. In looking at today's front page, we have headlines of Bridal Shop Gets Fresh Look and Dubuque Couple Still Going Strong. But today, we will start with Dubuque to crack down on neglected properties. Change to ordinance gives the city manager the ability to declare a property a nuisance, by John Cruz. Dubuque officials are looking to crack down on neglected properties in the city. The Dubuque City Council recently voted unanimously to pass an ordinance amendment that gives the city manager the ability to declare a property a nuisance, a right previously reserved for the city council. Properties in Dubuque can be declared a nuisance if they are found to be creating conditions that are injurious to the health and safety of tenants or the public. Nuisance properties can be declared if a parcel is found to accumulate waste or refuse, have stagnant water, create conditions for vermin or pests, or have improperly operating private sewer or septic systems. Alex Digger, Housing and Community Development Director for the city, said declaring a property a nuisance allows city staff to directly address the identified problem. The cost for fixing that problem is then billed to the property owner. Steger said declaring a property a nuisance is typically only pursued by the city when several attempts by the housing department to get the property owner to address the problem are unsuccessful. It happens when we get no response from the property owner and the problem is becoming a serious problem for the public, Steger said. Prior to the recent city council vote, if a property was under consideration for being declared a nuisance, the city housing department would first be required to hold a public hearing on the property before the council, which would then need to vote for the declaration's approval. However, Steger said the number of potential nuisance properties in the city has expanded rapidly, with more than 100 vacant or abandoned properties identified by the city and 5 documented cases of hoarding. Steger said giving the city manager the ability to declare a public nuisance would expedite the process, allowing the city to more actively pursue remedying neglected properties. It would make the process easier for both the city and the property owners, Steger said. For us, it's about getting the property back up to code as soon as possible. Potential nuisance properties may still be given a public hearing before the city council if requested by the property owners, but on Monday, city council member Brad Kavanaugh expressed concerns that the ordinance change would make it more challenging for property owners to present their defense to the city council. I'm a little concerned that this is not going to see the light of a public hearing just as easily, Kavanaugh said. How will the person be notified that they have a right to a public hearing? Steger informed Kavanaugh that the city serves multiple notifications to the property owner informing them of the city's actions. She added that steps are taken to determine if mental health is playing a role in the status of the property. If so, the city looks to work with local mental health organizations to properly address the problem. Steger said requests to declare 3 properties as nuisances have already been sent to City Manager Mike Van Milligan. City staff have also proposed amending another city ordinance that would allow the city to abate tenant rent for a property if the owner is found to be without an active rental license, if failing to provide an essential utility service, or has failed to remedy an issue on the property that poses a risk to the health and safety of tenants. Additionally, this ordinance change would allow the city to set up escrow accounts for rental properties that remain in non-compliance with city code. The rent that would be paid to that property owner would instead be paid to the city through the account. That money would be used to remediate the city code violation. Steger said the ordinance change would give the city another method of addressing long-standing code violations for rental properties. It's something we can use when we have exhausted all our means to get a property owner to fix the code violations, Steger said. However, Lynn Lamp, vice president of the Dubuque Area Landlords Association, said he believes this ordinance amendment goes too far, arguing that the city already has enough ability to push property owners to address any code violations. If you aren't taking care of a problem, then you lose your rental license and then you cannot rent anymore, Lamp said. Most landowners are going to fix the problem, so that doesn't happen. There are a few that are not taking care of their properties, but it's really a small amount. Steger said the ordinance change will likely be reviewed by city council members sometime in July. Next from the front page, under BizBuzz, Bridal Shop Gets Fresh Look by Jeff Montgomery. BizBuzz shares business tidbits from the tri-states. In addition to this update from Platteville, Wisconsin, we will feature additional local developments in Tuesday's edition. A series of changes at a Platteville bridal boutique is breathing a new life into the longtime business. The owners of A&M Bridal Boutique recently changed its name to simply Bridal Boutique, updated its website and branding, and conducted significant interior renovations. Tommy Gill said the business has switched things up since August 2019 when Haley Mockrose joined Gill as co-owner of the business. We have sort of hit the refresh button on a lot of things, Gill said. We are trying to maintain the foundational elements that have made the business so successful over the years, while also giving it a new look and energy. Gill has worked at Bridal Boutique for about 19 years. She came into ownership of the business in 2010. When Mockrose became a co-owner, it fulfilled a lifelong dream in the process. I always knew I wanted to own a small business, she said. That was always the dream. I started with a lemonade stand, and it grew from there. Once she joined forces with Gill, the two wasted little time putting their mark on the business, which has served area customers for four decades. The business's new name is among the changes. The prior name reflected the first initials of previous owners Ann Kettler and Margie Spensley. The current co-owners also renovated significant portions of the building. This included the creation of a new bridal suite, complete with antique windows and a chandelier where brides-to-be can try on wedding dresses. On top of that, they have repainted the entire facility and plan to install new flooring this summer. Mockrose said the interaction with customers is her favorite part of the job. We get to work with someone during such an important part of their lives, she said. Sometimes we work with whole families for weddings, and we are building relationships with three or even four generations of a family all at once. In addition to its bridal work, the business works with clients seeking the ideal homecoming and prom gowns. The business is located at 40 East Main Street and is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday through Friday and 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays throughout the summer. It can be reached at 608-348-8790. Business Tips Sought. Do you have an interesting story or news tip to share about a local business? Ideas can be shared with business editor Jeff Montgomery by calling 563-588-5753 or emailing jeff.montgomery@thmedia.com. And finally, from the front page, in the Love That Lasts, a continuing series featuring tri-state couples married 50-plus years, Dubuque couple still going strong. More than six decades and nine children later, Bernadette and Doug Hilby continue to complement each other, by Olivia Garrett. Doug Hilby and Bernadette Burning's wedding festivities began with an 8:30 a.m. mass and ended with a dance that lasted until 1 a.m. the next morning. They aren't entirely sure how they met. Doug guesses it might have been a ball game or a dance, but the memory of that 1953 wedding remains firm. She was a speedy center fielder for the girls' softball team, undefeated, by the way, Doug said. Our group of boys from Menominee, Illinois, always seemed to be chasing after the Sinsinawa, Wisconsin girls. Doug proposed to Bernadette, who grew up in Sinsinawa, with a steak dinner at a restaurant in Dickeyville, Wisconsin. For the first 2 years of their marriage, Doug and Bernadette worked the farm Doug had grown up on in Menominee. That ended when Doug was drafted in 1955. I was running the farm because my dad had tuberculosis and he couldn't do heavy work, Doug said. I was actually the farmer until we got pulled off the farm because I was in the service. Dad eventually sold it. After 6 months at Fort Monmouth in New Jersey, Doug was sent to Heidelberg, Germany, where he worked in microwave radio repair. The young family bought a car and drove to Switzerland, the Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg. For work, Doug traveled to the top of Koningsstuhl in the Odenwald Mountains using an elevator he compares to Dubuque's 4th Street elevator. We were not sorry to have experienced that, Bernadette said. After 14 months abroad, the Hilbys moved to Dubuque. We went over with 2 boys and came back with 3, Doug said. For the first few years, Doug ran a television sales and service business out of their home on Woodlawn Street. Eventually, he'd set up Doug's TV sales and service on University Avenue. Bernadette was a homemaker. Doug had grown up with 1 sibling, Bernadette with 10. I inherited a lot of in-laws, Doug said. Along the way, Doug and Bernadette ended up with a big family of their own. The first decades of their marriage were marked with an ever-growing family of 6 sons and 3 daughters, Steve, Jim, Michael, Kevin, Cheryl, Patrice, Lisa, Brian, and Chuck. Steve Hilby, the couple's oldest child, recalls sitting in his college dorm when his father called to say his youngest brother, Chuck Hilby, had been born. As Steve remembers hearing it, Doug drove Bernadette to the hospital in his television service van, went out to take a service call, and then returned to meet his 9th child. As soon as school let out each year, the Hilbys would pile into a camper van and set off on a vacation. 6th-born daughter, Patrice Brimeyer, recalls 1 year when the family took off to California for 21 days. Though the full van didn't have air conditioning, the memory is a fond one for Brimeyer. The regular road trips left an impact on Steve. That stuck with us, Steve said. That's something I've done with my own family. Bernadette enjoys photography and is an avid gardener. Over the last 3 years, Doug has helped her in the garden. Doug has also taken up woodworking in recent years. According to Doug, Bernadette never forgets a birthday or anniversary, not just for their 9 children, but also for 36 grandchildren and 34 great-grandchildren. Bernadette said Doug enjoys fixing things. Doug said that Bernadette is a good cook. My mother is very social, Brimeyer said. My dad loves information. He has an engineer's mind. My mother has a relationship with everyone and a good story with everyone. The Hilby children agree that education and faith are important to Bernadette and Doug. They complement each other very well, 8th-born Brian Hilby said. They've a lot of patience and kindness and faith. Mix it all together and it comes out pretty well. Next in today's almanac, today is Monday, June 14th, the 165th day of 2021. There are 200 days left in the year. This is Flag Day. On this date, in 1775, the Continental Army, forerunner of the United States Army, was created. In 1940, German troops entered Paris during World War II. The same day, the Nazis began transporting prisoners to the Auschwitz concentration camp in German-occupied Poland. And in 1943, the U.S. Supreme Court in West Virginia State Board of Education versus Barnett ruled 6-3 that public school students could not be forced to salute the flag of the United States. This almanac presented by the Associated Press. Next, from the Tri-State page, one additional area COVID-19 death, two new cases. The Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and vaccination. Sunday's developments included: there was one additional COVID-19 related death confirmed in Delaware County between 5 p.m. Saturday and 5 p.m. Sunday, increasing the county's death toll to 43. Two new cases were confirmed in Clayton County during the 24-hour span. There were no additional cases reported in the other nine counties in the Telegraph Herald coverage area. As of Sunday, 142,188 residents of the Telegraph Herald's coverage area had been fully vaccinated. That represents 58.5% of the area's population of those 16 and older. The Telegraph Herald soon will include younger children in the vaccination figures shared in each of these daily COVID-19 stories. The Pfizer vaccine was approved for children as young as 12 on May 10th, which means the first children in that age group could be fully vaccinated as of today. Starting on Tuesday, June 15th, the Telegraph Herald will provide vaccination figures that include those children as well. As a result, the percentages of fully vaccinated in-area counties will drop initially, but then they will start climbing again. The next Dubuque County walk-in vaccination clinic will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. today at Dubuque Visiting Nurse Association. See the full list of vaccination sites at bit.ly/3uetqno. The state of Iowa did not provide new county-level hospitalization data Sunday. The most recent data showed as of Tuesday that 5 residents of Dubuque County with COVID-19 were hospitalized, as was 1 resident of Delaware County. No such residents of Clayton, Jackson, or Jones counties were hospitalized. Iowa reported 52 additional residents with COVID-19 in the 24-hour period that ended at 5 p.m. Sunday, increasing the state's total to 372,577. The state reported 3 additional related deaths, increasing the total to 6,102. As of Sunday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported 1,441,717 people in Iowa had been fully vaccinated, 57.8% of the state's residents who are at least 16 years old. In Wisconsin, the State Department of Health Services did not update its confirmed cases or deaths on Sunday. So far, the state has reported 611,534 confirmed COVID-19 cases and 7,206 deaths. As of Sunday, 2,701,535 Wisconsin residents have been fully vaccinated, 58% of the state's residents who are at least 16. Illinois reported 1,387,595 COVID-19 cases as of Sunday, an increase of 298 cases. The state's death toll rose by 11 to 23,061. As of Sunday, 5,326,217 Illinois residents have been fully vaccinated, 52.4% of the state's residents who are at least 16. Also from the Tri-State page, Clark to hike minimum wage, limit president's pay. Plan also calls for adjustment of employee compensation at levels within or above the second quartile of peer colleges in the state by 2023, by Ali Henga. Clark University leaders plan to raise their minimum wage to $15 an hour and cap the president's salary based on the school's lowest paid full-time employee. The measures are part of a new compensation plan announced by school officials last week, effective this month with the start of the college's fiscal year. "We want people to stay at Clark," said Jane Daly Seberg, chairwoman of Clark's Board of Trustees, We want people to stay in Dubuque to work, and we are not only honoring our core value of justice with this move, we think this is good for Dubuque as well. The salary of Clark's president will be frozen while the plan is implemented. After that time, the president's salary will be capped at no more than 10 times the pay of the school's lowest paid full-time employee, according to a press release. The plan also calls for Dubuque officials to adjust employee compensation at, quote, levels within or above, end quote, the second quartile of peer colleges in the state by 2023. By 2026, school leaders will raise their minimum wage for full-time workers to $15 an hour. By 2027, officials will adjust compensation to median levels or higher compared to peer institutes. Seberg and Clark President Tom Chesney said the plan was adopted after an examination of equity in employee pay. What we found was some people are clearly at median or where they should be from the market point of view, but there were people, in particular our essential workers, custodial staff, and food service workers and others on campus who were below, Seberg said. Chesney said essential workers will be among those impacted by the new compensation plan, noting that the lower range of full-time staff make $10 to $12 an hour. Other impacts will show up in pockets of employees depending on their situation. We wanted to make sure that we are not an employer that is not meeting a living wage standard for our employees and to put that in writing with timing, Chesney said. We also noted that the university cannot be stagnant in its compensation if it wants to remain competitive in hiring. While not seeking to run out and immediately get to the high end, be the highest compensating employer in Iowa, aiming for the middle, being at the median overall, is a fair target, Chesney said. Chesney and Seberg said the compensation plan will add more than $500,000 to Clark's budget in its first 2 years. College leaders are looking at ways to spread out that increase across different revenue streams so it doesn't fall on the backs of students. The board believes we are being true to Clark, Seberg said. We're being true to our people, and this will position us well long term, I believe, to do the work that we need to do for both students, but also for our community. And from the Dubuque page, former Lieutenant Governor celebrates dairy at Grant County Farm Breakfast. Rebecca Cleefish applauds the hard work of Wisconsin's dairy farmers during visit to Cuba City event by Eric Hogstrom, Dateline Cuba City, Wisconsin. Rebecca Cleefish said it was fantastic that she could help celebrate Grant County's dairy industry. Cleefish, a Republican who served from 2011 to 2019 as the 44th Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, visited the 2021 Grant County Dairy Breakfast held Sunday at Vosburgh Colonial Acres, a dairy farm operated by Mark and Renee Vosburgh in rural Cuba City. I love being out on the farm, Cleefish said. You see milk, you see butter, you see cheese in the grocery stores, and too few people know the process by which it is produced. That's why these dairy breakfasts are a gift across Wisconsin. Organizers expected more than 3,000 people to attend the event, and a steady stream of vehicles continued to roll along the lane leading up to the Vosburgh farm throughout the morning. That's 3,000 more people who understand Wisconsin's dairy industry and can have a deeper appreciation, most of all, for what farmers do for our economy, but also the understanding that the milk and the butter and the cream and the cheese don't simply appear in our restaurants and on tables, Cleefish said. It takes a lot of hard work. Wisconsin Representative Travis Trunell, Republican from Cuba City, spent much of the morning delivering pancakes on a tray while greeting people eating breakfast at one of the first local, large-scale public gatherings since the lifting of many pandemic-related restrictions. Coming out of COVID-19, people are genuinely in a better mood, Trunell said. Trunell said he welcomed Cleefish's visit in part because it raises the profile of local dairy farmers and their work. "This is a remarkable opportunity to get people like Rebecca Cleefish out on the farm," he said. Although Wisconsin remains the nation's number two dairy producer, the number of dairy farms has fallen by one-third in the state during the past 7 years, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. "As there are fewer farms, politicians become more removed from farming," Trunell said. He said that makes it more difficult for politicians to understand farm-related concerns. Farm owner Mark Vosburg said it was an honor to host the breakfast and to represent the state's dairy farmers. "There's no bigger tradition in Wisconsin than dairy farming," Vosburg said. "We want people to come out and see that their food is safe, the animals are well cared for, and that we're stewards of the land. We want people to see what's going on out here." Tony and Becky Daniels of Cuba City toured the Vosburg farm with their sons, Easton 7 and Cooper 6. "We enjoy it," Tony Daniels said. "We got to see a working farm. It's good to see where our food comes from." Cleefish has maintained a political profile since leaving office and has been touring the state in recent months, speaking with residents as part of an organization called the 1848 Project, named after the year Wisconsin entered the United States. The nonprofit advocacy organization was formed to produce conservative policy proposals for the state. "We will be rolling out our policy agenda for Wisconsin's future in the near future, and I suppose after that happens, you can look forward to me determining what my next step is going to be," Cleefish said. "I will make it my top priority to ensure that Democrat Tony Evers is a one-term governor." Also from the Dubuque page, new leader wants more inclusive panel for mental health, disabilities services. Ann Cameron Williams hopes to fill advisory board with Dubuque County residents who have, quote, lived disability experiences, end quote, by Benjamin Fisher. After 3 months on the job, new Dubuque County Mental Health and Disability Services Director Ann Cameron Williams has diagnosed a need for a more representative, inclusive advisory board. Her pitch to the Dubuque County Board of Supervisors during a meeting last week was to fill the Dubuque County Disabilities Council with local folks who have experiences either with or near disabilities. "People with physical and intellectual or developmental disabilities, they have their own civil rights movement," Williams said. "They're all over the country." She has taken a slogan of the movement, quote, "Nothing about us, without us," end quote, as the mission statement for her effort. "They're saying, if you're going to make policy decisions about our lives, please let us be at the table," Williams said. "We have an amazing opportunity in front of us to do just that, take this little committee structure and make sure people with lived disability experiences across the board have the opportunity to participate, to be part of their county government as an advisory committee, and make sure they're translating those experiences to the county so we can do a better job if that's what we need to do. This inclusion of people with lived disabilities was always the idea behind the board, based on the types of positions on it. But Williams said it has not been filled as intended. Of the positions, 11 are labeled as advocacy representatives, family members or people with lived experiences, she said. "I've reached out to everyone that we have an email for and invited them to renew their commitment. But I cannot tell that we have had anybody with lived disability experience on the council." Also, 13 of the 19 positions on the board are either currently vacant or filled with members who have not reapplied for their position as the end of their terms draw near, according to Williams. And, she said, the group has also not met this year. "Beginning in July, I will reconvene on a bi-monthly basis to energize an outreach effort to engage people of the county and not just from Dubuque, but also in rural areas, she said. We need diversity on the board and a diversity of disabilities. Supervisor Harley Potthoff supported Williams' vision and plan. It seems right now like the advisory board is sitting still and doing nothing, he said. It would be nice to have a full table. Supervisor Ann McDonough also expressed support and encouraged Williams to work closely with the Dubuque County Health Department as well. Some other counties would place you two next to each other in a physical location, so you're working together for public health, she said. I'm looking forward to your continued organization as we work to create a dynamic department. For more information about the council or department, Williams can be reached by emailing Ann, that's A-N-N, .Williams@DubuqueCounty.us. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Monday, June 14th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Under funeral services, Michelle M. Allen from Galena, Illinois. Services at 11 a.m. today at Furlong Funeral Home. Mary P. Bildstein of Dyersville, Iowa. Visitation 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, June 16th at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Mass of Christian burial at 11 a.m. Wednesday, June 16th at St. Francis Xavier Basilica in Dyersville. Amber L. Cavanaugh of Dubuque, visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. today at Leonard Funeral Home, 2595 Rockdale Road. Services at 7 p.m. today at the funeral home. E. R. Clare of Platteville, Wisconsin, visitation from 9 to 11 a.m. Thursday, June 17th at Melby Funeral Home in Platteville. Celebration of life at 11 a.m. Thursday at the funeral home. James P. Cody of Godfrey, Illinois. Visitation from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, June 18th at St. Columbkill's Catholic Church in Dubuque. Mass of Christian burial at 11 a.m. Friday, June 18th at the church. Jeanette Duane of Dubuque. Visitation from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, June 16th at St. Anthony Catholic Church. Mass of Christian burial at 10:30 a.m. at the church. Jerry A. Edlin of Otter Creek, Iowa. Services at 11 a.m. Thursday, June 24th at St. Lawrence Catholic Church in Otter Creek. Lana J. Gratis of Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Visitation from 10 to 11 a.m. today at Garrity Funeral Home in Prairie du Chien. Services at 11 a.m. today at the funeral home. Donald J. Gronimus of Cuba City, Wisconsin. Visitation from 9 to 11:45 a.m. Wednesday, June 16th at St. Rose of Lima Church in Cuba City. Mass of Christian burial at 12 noon at the church. Mitchell C. Hockhausen of Potosi, Wisconsin. Celebration of life from 1 to 5 p.m. Saturday, June 19th at Holiday Gardens Event Center in Potosi. Erwin J. Horsfield of Epworth, Iowa. Visitation from 2 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, June 15th at Reef Funeral Home in Epworth. Mass of Christian burial at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, June 16th at St. John the Baptist Catholic Church in Peosta. Lillian L. Nackey of Bellevue, Iowa. Visitation from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Friday, July 2nd at Hockman Meyer Funeral Home in Bellevue. Funeral Mass at 11 a.m. July 2nd at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Bellevue. William Lullyfeld of Gutenberg, Iowa. Visitation from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, June 15th at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Gutenberg. Services at 11 a.m. Tuesday, June 15th at the church. Kevin Morarend of Gutenberg, Iowa. Services at 11 a.m. today at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Garnavillo. Mary G. Ryan of East Dubuque, Illinois. Visitation from 3 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, June 15th at Miller Funeral Home in East Dubuque. Mass of Christian Burial at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, June 16th at St. Mary's Catholic Church in East Dubuque. Robert L. Smart of Dubuque, Iowa. Visitation from 9 to 11:15 a.m. Tuesday, June 15th at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church. Services at 11:30 a.m. Tuesday, June 15th at the church. Laura E. Sugden of Platteville, Wisconsin. Visitation from 4 to 6 p.m. today at Melby Funeral Home in Platteville. Services at 6 p.m. today at the funeral home. Frederick T. Taft, Jr. of Dubuque. Visitation from 1 to 4 p.m. Tuesday, June 15th at Leonard Funeral Home, 2595 Rockdale Road. Service at 4 p.m. Tuesday, June 15th at the funeral home. William E. Vallant of Dyersville, Iowa. Visitation from 2 to 8 p.m. today and 9 to 10 a.m. Tuesday, June 15th at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Services at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, June 15th at St. Francis Xavier Basilica in Dyersville. Margaret I. Vesperman of Lancaster, Wisconsin. Visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, June 17th and 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Friday, June 18th at Martin Schwartz Funeral Home. Services at 10:30 a.m. Friday, June 18th at the funeral home. Kevin M. Vondra of Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Celebration of Life from 4 to 7:30 p.m. Wednesday, June 23rd at Sunset Lanes in Dickeyville, Wisconsin. K. J. Zasada of Ankeny, Iowa. Visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. today at Hamilton's near Highland Memory Garden in Des Moines. Services at 10 a.m. Tuesday, June 15th at All Saints Catholic Church in Des Moines. Next, from the sports page under Boys Prep Golf, Wisconsin State Tournament, Area Golfers Head to State by Jim Leitner. Two area teams and one individual will participate in the 95th Annual Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association State Golf Tournament this week. Here is a capsule look at the event. Site, Trappers Turn Golf Club in Wisconsin Dells. Schedule, 8:30 a.m. today and Tuesday. Format, the tournament features 8 teams and 12 individuals in Division III. Weather permitting, all competitors will play 36 holes, 18 holes on each day. The lowest scores from the first day will have the latter tee times on Tuesday. Who qualified? The top 2 teams from each of the 4 sectionals qualified. The top 3 individuals who are not members of a qualifying team in each sectional also qualified for the meet. Division 3 team qualifiers. Mineral Point. The Pointers, coached by Corey Sokol, won their own sectional meet last week at the par 70 Dodge Point Country Club with a 327, 7 strokes clear of runner-up Fenimore. Sophomore Carson Kroll tied for second place with a 77, junior Ollie Mitchell took fifth with a 79, freshman Alex Ross tied for 11th with an 84, and senior Chandler Workman took 19th with an 87 to account for the Pointers team score. Freshman Spencer Workman carded a 96. Earlier in the tournament series, the Pointers won the Barneveld Regional with a 359 on the par 72 House of the Rock at Spring Green, Wisconsin. Fenimore. The Golden Eagles, coached by Tom Needham, carded a 334 to defeat Lancaster by 10 strokes at the Mineral Point sectional meet. Senior Adam Larson and sophomore Brady Larson tied for 6th place with 81s. Senior Drew Filfrick tied for 9th with an 83, and senior Skylar Gieske tied for 22nd with an 89. Senior Caleb Schultz also competed in sectionals for Fenimore. At the Barneville Regional Meet, Fenimore finished 2 strokes behind Mineral Point and 12 ahead of Lancaster. Also in the field, Durand, Oliva Strum, Kohler, Marathon, Newman Catholic, and Racine Lutheran. Division 3 individual qualifier. Lancaster Jr. Noah Kirch won the Mineral Point sectional meet with a 71, 6 shots ahead of Fenimore's Carson Kroll. Kirch also won the Barneville Regional Meet with a 5-over par 77, 2 strokes better than Parkview's Trey Oswald. Also in the field, junior Sam Dobbins of Aquinas, sophomore Nick Buckman of Cambridge, sophomore Alex Rasmussen of Drummond, junior Jack West of Ladysmith, senior Grant McGraw of Living Word Lutheran, junior Ross Anderson of Luck Frederick, senior Peyton Schulke of Manawa, junior Trey Oswald of Parkview, senior Teddy Schumacher of St. Mary's Springs, freshman Caden Bailey of St. Thomas Aquinas, and senior Christian Johnson of Wisconsin Valley Lutheran. Next, in the local and area roundup, Merfeld wins second feature of season at Dubuque. Luke Merfeld won his second IMSA late model feature of the season at Dubuque Speedway. The Dubuque driver beat Ron Klein of Sherrill, Iowa to the checkers in the 25-lap feature for his first win at Dubuque since May 2nd. Logan Duffy of Independence, Iowa, Eric Pollard of Peosta, Iowa, and Justin Kay of Wheatland, Iowa rounded out the top five. Ryan Dumy of Lamont, Iowa won his second 20-lap IMSA modified feature of the season at Dubuque and his first since May 9th. Pollard took second. Tyler Soap of Sherrill, Iowa took his first 15-lap IMSA Sport Mod feature of the year at Dubuque. Scott Bush of Cuba City, Wisconsin finished second. Tyler Ball of Independence, Iowa claimed his first 15-lap IMSA Hobby Stock feature at Dubuque by beating Jimmy Dosher of Hollandale, Wisconsin. DJ Sweet of Georgetown, Wisconsin won his second 15-lap limited late model feature of the year at Dubuque, and Corey Vanderwilt of Sully, Iowa claimed his first win at Dubuque in the 12-lap two-man cruiser division. In semi-pro baseball, Epworth 9, Holy Cross 1, at Epworth, Iowa. Nolan Hawk, Brett Featherston, and Dylan Pardo all had a pair of hits, and the Orioles rolled to the Prairie League win. Lucas Bixby earned the win. Logan Zara went 2-for-3 for Holy Cross. Bernard 2, Dubuque Packers 1, at Bernard, Iowa. Mike Blake went 4-for-4 with a double for Dubuque, but the Indians made the most of their 4 hits and scratched across a run in the bottom of the 7th to win the Prairie League contest. Trace Hoffman earned the win. Cascade 8, Worthington 4, at Cascade, Iowa. Bryce Simon, Nate McMullen, and Logan Otting drove in 2 runs each for the Reds in the Eastern Iowa Hawkeye League win. Blake Simon earned the win after allowing 3 runs on 7 hits. Cascade used a 7-run 5th to pull ahead. Jared Harris and Ben Ogden had 2 hits each for the Cardinals. Dubuque Budweiser's 3, Farley 0, and Dubuque Budweiser's 12, Farley 5, at Dubuque. Aiden Wojciechowski scattered 4 hits in 6 innings to lead the Buds in the opener, and Dubuque pounded out 14 hits in the second game. Alex Vossen had 2 hits in each game for Farley. Bellevue 2, Zwingle 1, at Zwingle, Iowa. The Braves pushed across 2 runs in the top of the 7th to rally for the Prairie League win. Balltown 2, Worthington 1, at Farley, Iowa. Charlie Yeager scattered 6 hits and struck out 9 to lift Balltown in the Farley tournament Saturday night. Balltown meets Farley in Tuesday's semifinals. Marquise Dew led Worthington with 2 hits. And under semi-pro soccer, Union Dubuque 1, Edgewater Cascade 1, at Chicago. A perfectly executed corner kick in the 90th minute gave Union Dubuque a draw Saturday night. David Palma delivered a strong cross to the head of the onrushing Owen Howard, giving Union a precious point in the Midwest Premier League standings. The point in the standings leaves Union in 7th place in the 12-team MWPI. Union's next game is Saturday, June 19th, against 5th place Berber City in Chicago. Next, looking at the Major League Baseball wrap-up, Cubs finished sweep of Cardinals. Zach Davies tossed 2-hit ball into the 7th inning to outduel Carlos Martinez, and the Chicago Cubs beat the St. Louis Cardinals 2-0 on Sunday night to complete a 3-game sweep. The Cubs have won 5 straight and 15 of 20 to remain in a tie with the Milwaukee Brewers atop the National League Central. Chicago kept up its success at Wrigley Field, where it's won 6 in a row and 9 of 10. The teams combined for only 6 hits, 4 by the Cubs. Anthony Rizzo went 1-for-4 and recorded the game's only RBI. St. Louis has dropped 3 straight and 11 of 13 to fall 1 game below 500 at 32-33. Davies, 4-3, struck out 6 and walked 2 in 6 2/3 innings to win his second straight start. The Cubs scored twice in the third. Eric Sogard led off with a double, advanced to third on a ground out, and scored when shortstop Paul DeJong misplayed a grounder by Jacques Peterson for an error with 2 outs. 2 batters later, Peterson scored on a single by Rizzo. Brewers 5, Pirates 2 at Milwaukee. Avisail Garcia hit a 2-run homer off David Bednar, 0-1. Christian Zelik added a pinch-hit sacrifice fly on his bobblehead day, and Milwaukee completed a 3-game sweep to win for the 14th time in 16 games. Braves 6, Marlins 4 at Miami. Drew Smyly, 3-3, allowed 2 runs over 5 innings on his 32nd birthday to help Atlanta stop a 4-game slide. Miami's Austin Riley homered and drove in 3 runs, going 3-for-3 with a walk and getting hit by a pitch. Nationals 5, Giants nothing. At Washington, Kyle Schwarber became the 6th player in the history of the Washington Nationals and Montreal Expos franchise to homer in both the first and second innings, driving in 4 runs. Reds 6, Rockies 2 at Cincinnati. Eugenio Suarez hit a 2-run homer, and Cincinnati won for the 10th time in 13 games to move over 500 for the first time since it was 9-8. Padres 7, Mets 3 at New York. Fernando Tatis Jr. hit a tie-breaking grand slam off Jacob Barnes in the 7th inning, his 19th homer of this season, and Manny Machado followed with a home run as San Diego stopped a 4-game slide. In the American League, White Sox 4, Tigers 1 at Detroit. Carlos Rodon, 6-2, took a no-hit bid into the 7th before Eric Hase's 1-out double, and Chicago completed a 3-game sweep. Rodon allowed 1 run and 1 hit in 7 innings. Evan Marshall and Liam Hendricks completed the 1-hitter, with Hendricks getting his American League leading 17th save. Jose Abreu hit a go-ahead single in the 4th off Tyler Alexander, 0-1. Astros 14, Twins 3 at Minneapolis. Michael Brantley had his 2nd 4-hit game of the series with 3 doubles and 4 RBIs. Houston had a season-high 20 hits and took 2 of 3 from the Twins. Minnesota's Michael Pineda, 3-4, left after 4 innings due to right forearm soreness that first bothered him June 1st. In his 2nd start since returning, he allowed 3 runs and 6 hits. Mariners 6, Indians 2 at Cleveland. Jake Fraley homered off American League Cy Young Award winner Shane Bieber, 7-4, after replacing Mitch Haniger, who was helped from the field after bruising his left knee when he fouled a pitch in the 1st inning. Rays 7, Orioles 1 at St. Petersburg, Florida. Randy Arozarena hit his first career Grand Slam. Tampa Bay relievers threw 7 no-hit innings, and the Rays handed Baltimore its 15th consecutive road loss, the club's worst road skid since it moved from St. Louis to Baltimore in 1954. Blue Jays 18, Red Sox 4 at Boston. Teoscar Hernandez hit a pair of 3-run homers over the Green Monster, 2 of Toronto's 8 long balls in the blowout win. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Kevon Biggio, Rowdy Tellez, and Marcus Semien also went deep for Toronto. Athletics 6, Royals 3 at Oakland, California. Chris Bassitt escaped a scary line drive to win his 7th straight decision, and Matt Olson homered twice for Oakland. In interleague play, Phillies 7, Yankees nothing at Philadelphia. Aaron Nola, 5-4, allowed 3 hits and struck out 9 in 7 2/3 innings, and Philadelphia completed a 2-game sweep that moved the Phillies back over 500 at 32-31. Odubel Herrera, Gene Segura, and JT Realmuto combined to go 7-for-13 with a double, a triple, 4 runs scored, and 5 RBIs. Dodgers 5, Rangers 3 at Los Angeles. Walker Buehler pitched 6 scoreless innings of 5-hit ball to remain unbeaten since 2019, and Mookie Betts homered and scored 3 runs as Los Angeles held off Texas. Angels 10, Diamondbacks 3 at Phoenix. Max Stassi hit a 2-run homer in the first, Patrick Sandoval pitched 4-hit ball into the 7th, and Los Angeles won its 6th straight game. Next, the Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week, this week's finalist. Eli Green of Cascade. The senior right-hander tossed a no-hitter on Tuesday when Cascade earned a 4-0 victory at Iowa City Regina in River Valley Conference play. He faced the minimum 21 batters, struck out 14, and had an immaculate inning of 3 strikeouts on 9 pitches. He is committed to Southeastern Community College in Burlington, Iowa. Sawyer Nauman of Western Dubuque. Through 13 games, the senior first baseman has gone 26-for-42, a .619 average, with 11 doubles, 6 home runs, 37 RBIs, 7 walks, 5 hit batsman, and only 1 strikeout. He owns a .704 on base percentage and a 1.310 slugging percentage. Nauman leads the state, regardless of class, with 55 total bases. He also leads the state in RBIs and is tied for the lead in home runs. Nauman ranks 2nd in slugging percentage and doubles and is tied for 4th in hits. Madison Russell of Schulzburg. Russell continued her assault on the record books in the pole vault. Already owner of the highest vaults in school and program history, Russell had larger aspirations. During the Six Rivers Conference meet on June 7th, the Benton Scales Mound Schulzburg Triop Senior smashed the conference record, which previously stood at 9 feet 9 inches, with a record vault of 10 feet 6 inches. That vault also gave her the top vault in Schulzburg High School history for a male or female. Her contribution on the track helped the Lady Knights capture the conference title for the 8th consecutive year. The postseason meet begins this week. Visit telegraphherald.com/athlete to cast your vote. The polls close at 5 p.m. each Tuesday. In sports in brief, Erickson, quote, was gone, end quote, before being resuscitated on field. Dateline, Copenhagen. Denmark's team doctors said Sunday that soccer star Christian Eriksen's heart stopped and that he was gone before being resuscitated with a defibrillator at the European Championship. Eriksen collapsed during Denmark's opening Euro 2020 group game against Finland on Saturday and was given lengthy medical treatment before regaining consciousness. He was gone, and we did cardiac resuscitation. And it was cardiac arrest, said team doctor Morten Boesen, who led the work in giving Erickson treatment on the field. How close were we? I don't know. We got him back after one defib. That's quite fast. Erickson was in stable condition at a Copenhagen hospital and had spoken to teammates via video link on Sunday, team officials said. Boesen said it was still unclear what caused the midfielder's collapse. He also said the 29-year-old Erickson may not have survived had the game not been played at a major soccer tournament with top-class medical equipment at hand. Denmark coach Kasper Hjelmand said when he spoke to Erickson, the Inter Milan midfielder was more concerned about his teammates' well-being than his own. The Danish players and team staff were being given crisis management assistance as they processed the incident. Erickson fell face forward to the ground late in the first half, and his teammates formed a protective circle around him while the medics gave him treatment. The game was suspended for more than 90 minutes before resuming. Finland won 1-0 after scoring in the second half. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Monday, June 14th, 2021. I'm your reader, Ralph Skippers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. As always, thanks for listening, and be well.